Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today we'll learn how to fix the economy and society. Or maybe not. In any case, we'll hear Annie Leonard's new video, The Story of Broke, plus some words by Kevin Carson and Chris Hedges. I hope you'll stay tuned. This show is not about the U.S.'s war with Iran, but let's start there. As I record these notes, I'm dismayed to see that the drive to war is well underway. Does a war with Iran seem right or even sane to you? Does it seem right or even sane to anybody you know? Probably not. As the late Howard Zinn noted on this show just a couple weeks ago, our wars begin with a massive propaganda campaign to prepare the people. The people seldom want a war, but with enough propaganda, the rulers can bring enough of the people around. Didn't they follow exactly this script leading up to our war on Iraq? No matter, Americans have short memories, and they're more than willing to take at face value every lie told to them by the authorities. The lies about Iran have really intensified in recent months. But our leaders have been lying about Iran for years. Remember the great anthrax scare of 2001? Think back. Anthrax. Oh yes, right after 9/11. Yes, that one. Well, do you remember that our government soon announced that they had traced the anthrax to Iran? Because they had found traces of bentonite among the anthrax spores. Bentonite! Back when I was a home winemaker, I used to buy bentonite by the bag. Not in the black market in Kabul, but at the wine art store on Murray Avenue. Winemakers used bentonite in clarifying the young wine. Our leaders didn't realize that tens of thousands of Americans knew that bentonite was a very common, harmless clay found all over America. A couple of years later, the same liars said that a certain type of roadside bomb that was killing American soldiers in Iraq had to come from Iran. This bomb was the so-called Explosively Formed Penetrator, or EFP. They said it was too sophisticated a device to come from Iraq, so it had to come from Iran. Yes, Iran is killing our soldiers. Wait a minute. We're claiming that the Iraqis are building a nuclear bomb, but aren't sophisticated enough to build a little $10 roadside bomb? It turns out the Iraqis had been making EFPs in their garages since the 1940s. The Iran bentonite anthrax lie was dropped after about 2 days. The Iran EFP lie took about 3 days to expose. But lately, the lies and other propaganda have been zipping by so fast and furiously, one can hardly keep up, including the biggest lie, that Iran is building a nuclear bomb. For now, let's leave aside the utter immorality of launching an unprovoked aggressive war against a country that has done nothing to harm us. Let's leave aside the utter immorality of what passes for any war these days, which is nothing but the massive slaughter of civilian non-combatants. Let's also leave aside the utter illegality of launching an unprovoked aggressive war. For now, let's just ask, can we afford it? I mean, the country is supposedly broke, right? After paying for enormously costly wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and making the world economy collapse, and paying trillions to rescue the rich people who own the banks, aren't we too broke to start yet another unnecessary war of aggression? I mean, isn't our infrastructure crumbling because we can't afford to fix it? Aren't we firing firemen and school teachers because we can't afford to pay them? Aren't even the Democrats in Congress saying that we are so broke we've got to privatize Social Security, cut back on Medicare, and to hell with the poor people on Medicaid? If we can't afford to pay school teachers, How can we afford yet another illegal, immoral, and totally unnecessary war? We're broke, remember? Don't worry, our politicians say. God will find a way. Anyway, being broke brings us to filmmaker Annie Leonard. Her films are essentially lectures, so they lend themselves well to radio. In the past, we broadcast her groundbreaking The Story of Stuff. We also broadcast some shorter works that followed, The Story of Electronics and The Story of Bottled Water. Well, Annie Leonard has a new one out, The Story of Broke. We'll hear it now, and we'll also hear a sort of rebuttal to it by a chap named Kevin Carson. Carson points out some flaws in Annie Leonard's argument. He advances an alternative vision, which I think also has some flaws. You wanted a quick, easy solution to our country's social and economic plight? Well, try tuning in again next week. I'm pretty sure we don't have the solution this week. But on to Annie Leonard. I wish she had spent more time talking about the blankety-blank military. She mentions this in passing. She does have some smart things to say about wasteful government spending of other sorts. If Washington would stop subsidizing, say, big oil and big agribusiness, there'd be plenty of tax money available for what our people and our planet really need. Right? Here's Annie Leonard.
In season one of The Story of Stuff, we looked at a system that creates way too much stuff and way too little of what we really want. Now we're going to start looking at the stories behind The Story of Stuff. That's where we'll find ways to turn this situation around. Welcome to Season 2.
The Story of Broke. Why there's still plenty of money to build a better future.
These last few years, I've had to get a lot more careful about how I spend my paycheck. Everyone has. Like I'm eating out less often, holding back on expenses I don't really need, and saving for my kids' college. I'm getting more responsible, taking control of how I spend. But one thing I can't control is that every month a big chunk of my paycheck goes off to our government. It's not the most fun part of my budget, but I believe in paying taxes. Not just because it's the law, but because it's how I invest in the better future that I can't afford to build on my own. You know, that future that we all want, and nearly every candidate promises us. Great schools, a healthy environment, clean energy, good jobs. But a funny thing happens to our money on its way to that better future. It seems to disappear. And by the time we get around to investing in that future, all I hear is, sorry, not this year, we're broke. In fact, we're so broke, they say, that we have no choice but to slide backwards, cutting things that made this country great, like schools and the EPA, maybe even Social Security and Medicare. Wait a minute, broke? I'm sending in my fair share of hard-earned cash every month, and so are you. If everyone did, we'd have plenty of money. Now, what we've got to work with shrinks a lot thanks to corporate tax loopholes and unprecedented tax breaks for the richest 1%. But even after those, we've still got over $1 trillion. So if we're broke, what's happening to all that money? I decided to look into it, and it turns out this whole broke story hides a much bigger story. A story of some really dumb choices being made for us. Choices that actually work against us. The good news is that these are choices, and we can make different ones. So where is all that money going? Well, first, the military takes the biggest chunk, $726 billion in 2011. Wow, we could build a lot of better future with that kind of money. Spending billions on fighter planes that we don't need, or wars with no end, and then saying we're broke just isn't honest. It's like calling your kid from your billion-dollar yacht to tell her you can't afford her school lunch money. Then hundreds of billions more go to propping up the dinosaur economy. You know, the obsolete system we talked about in The Story of Stuff? The one that produces more pollution, greenhouse gases, and garbage than any other on Earth, and doesn't even make us happy. In so many ways, it's just not working. But we're keeping it on life support instead of building something better. A lot of that life support comes in the form of subsidies. A subsidy is a giveaway that gives some companies a lift over others. That's not necessarily a bad thing. We should help companies that are building a better future. The problem is our government keeps lifting up companies that are actually dragging us down. Everywhere you look along the dinosaur economy, you'll find these subsidies. There's spending subsidies, where the government just gives our money away, like payments that benefit big agribusiness while helping drive family farms off a cliff. Or the less obvious version, where the government foots the bill for things corporations should pay for themselves, like cleaning up toxic chemical spills or giant livestock manure ponds. Or building roads that only go to one place, like a new Walmart. Or paying for polluting and wasteful garbage incinerators that would never make financial sense to build on their own. Then there's tax subsidies, which excuse big corporations from contributing their fair share, like the enormous tax breaks granted to oil and gas companies, even in times of record profits. These subsidies amount to billions we should be collecting and putting to good use. And then there's risk transfer subsidies, where our government acts as an investment bank or an insurance company for corporations doing risky things, like building nuclear reactors. If anything goes wrong, we have to cover for them. There's freebie subsidies, where our government gives stuff that belongs to all of us to corporations for cheap or even free. That's billions more that we should be collecting but never see. Like permits to mine public lands granted at prices set in the mining law of 1872. Really, 1872. President Grant signed this law to encourage settlement of the West. Newsflash, it's settled. And all this doesn't even count externalized costs. They don't show up on any spreadsheet and could amount to trillions of dollars, including all of the damage to the environment, public health, and the climate that this dinosaur economy causes. Without laws that make these polluters pay, we all pay with the loss of clean air and water, of increased asthma and cancer. By the time we've handed out all of these subsidies, there isn't even enough money to pay our bills. Forget about building the better future. So why is there always enough money for the dinosaur economy, from big oil to bailouts for big banks? But when it comes to building a better future, we're supposedly broke. Maybe it's because these guys know how to ask for it. Their lobbyists and giant campaign contributions let our government know what they want and what they'll do if they don't get it. And it works. U.S. senators who voted to keep big oil subsidies in 2011 had received 5 times more in big oil campaign cash than those who voted to end them. So, while subsidies should be a tool to help companies that are helping us all, they've become a prize for those with the most power to get on the handout list. But you know who has the real power? We do. What if we got as protective of our tax dollars as we are with the rest of our money? What if we told our government what we want and what we'll do if we don't get it, starting with voting them out? We could redirect these dinosaur subsidies, freeing up hundreds of billions of dollars. Forget broke. We could start building a better future right now. We could begin by reinvesting the $10 billion that we spend on oil and gas subsidies into renewable energy and energy efficiency projects. With just half of that amount, we could provide solar energy to about 2 million households. Then use the rest to retrofit 500,000 homes, creating jobs and saving energy year after year. The average cost of cleaning up a toxic Superfund site is $140 million. Let's make the polluters pay and instead invest our money in developing safer materials so we don't have to worry about spills in the first place. Most chemicals today are made from oil. That's why they're called petrochemicals. Switching just 20% of them to safer, bio-based materials would create over 100,000 new jobs. And instead of subsidizing garbage incinerators, let's subsidize real solutions, like zero waste. Raising the U.S. recycling rate to 75% would result in 1.5 million new jobs. With less pollution, less waste, and less pressure to harvest and mine new stuff, what's not to like? That would still leave billions of dollars for improving education, the best investment for a healthy economy. With $100 billion, we could increase the number of elementary school teachers by over 40% and give college scholarships to over 6 million students. See, we can rebuild the American dream. We can afford to have a healthy environment, good jobs, and top-notch public education. But not if we continue subsidizing the dinosaur economy. So the next time you have an idea for a better future and someone tells you, "That's nice, but there's no money for that," you tell them we are not broke. There is money. It's ours, and it's time to invest it right.
Okay, Annie Leonard's The Story of Broke, with a nice survey of how our taxes subsidize the wrong people and the wrong industries. Leonard's solution? Go to the polls, throw the bums out, and demand that our representatives represent our interests. Wait a minute. Didn't we do this in 2006? And do it quite thoroughly in 2008? And what happened? Didn't everything just get worse? Here's a nice piece by Kevin Carson, published in Counterpunch on November 28, and slightly condensed by me. It's called Two Cheers for the Story of Stuff. Annie Leonard's Story of Stuff videos examine the waste economy, subsidized inefficiency, and planned obsolescence. A recent installment, The Story of Broke, itemizes wasteful government spending on things like the military and enormous subsidies to prop up the well-named dinosaur economy. This is part of Leonard's argument that the government really isn't broke. If it stopped wasting money on bad stuff, it would have more than enough for building a better future. Her laundry list of things the government should spend money on includes energy efficiency projects, subsidies to alternative energy and green technology, and millions of college scholarships. But her vision of a better future reflects the internal contradictions of progressivism. On the one hand, we have the mid-20th century liberal vision of government intervention to build blockbuster infrastructure projects, spur creation of new industries, and create jobs. On the other hand, we have the green, small is beautiful sensibility, which emerged in the hippie era, of eliminating waste and mass consumerism. The two just don't go together. There's an inherent contradiction in Leonard's dismissal of the archaic dinosaur economy while calling for government policies to provide good jobs. Expansionist government activity to use industrial capacity and keep everyone working full-time is the old 20th century model. But if we eliminate the portion of industrial capacity and labor that goes to waste production, we wind up with lots of abandoned mass production factories and lots of people working 15-hour weeks and buying stuff from relocalized garage factories close to where they live. And that's not the sort of thing Bill Gates and Warren Buffett like because they can't make money off it. Sidebar comment, I think Carson's point is, if the big money boys can't see a way to make money from it, it's probably not going to happen. Back to the text. Another problem is Leonard's prescription. Who has the real power? We do! Really? Barack Obama is the most progressive Democrat in at least two generations. He garnered the largest Democratic majority since LBJ defeated Goldwater, entering office with an apparent mandate from the financial collapse. Congressional Democrats picked up a supermajority. If we didn't have the power to do these things in this once-in-a-lifetime alignment of the political stars, it's safe to say it will never happen. A government powerful enough to build a better future will almost certainly use that to benefit the few, the rich and the powerful. That's why we have all those dinosaur economy subsidies in the first place. If we want to build a better future, contesting the corporate oligarchy's control of the government is probably not the best way to go about it. Fortunately, there are millions of people out there who really are building a better future. They're doing it by treating big business and big government both as obstacles to be rooted around. They're building a new society within the decaying old society of dinosaur capitalism and its pet government, ready to replace it with something better when it collapses under its own weight. They include WikiLeaks, the file-sharing and free culture movements, and Occupy Wall Street. They include Linux developers, micro-manufacturers in projects like open-source ecology and hackerspaces, permaculturalists, and community-supported agriculture. They include the builders of encrypted currencies, barter systems, encrypted routers, and darknets. And they're not waiting for a government to give them permission. So ends Kevin Carson's Two Cheers for the Story of Stuff. I think he made a pretty good case that the unholy axis of big government and big business is incapable of reform. His solution? Ignore the system and develop our own homespun alternatives. But look, the country has 300 million people who need the necessities of life. That means that, let's say, 100 million people need a job with decent pay. While the system collapses, what are the jobs outside the system? Carson rattles off several. WikiLeaks, Occupy Wall Street, hackerspaces, community agriculture, encrypted currencies, encrypted routers, and whatever the heck a darknet is. I'm sure all of these enterprises are worthy, but it's hard to see how anybody could earn a living at this stuff, let alone 100 million people. Now, building and staffing shopping malls, it's a social and ecological disaster, but it provides employment. How many millions of people can survive by leaking government secrets, occupying Wall Street, encrypting currencies, and building darknets? You know I'm not prone to quoting Charlie Brown, but I think a maxim of his does speak to our social, political, and economic plight. That maxim is,
Sometimes it does when what could be is and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open, it seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges. The next day all of a sudden everything changes. When it all
with a good song about American civilization and the American economy. So, everybody agrees that there's a big problem with American capitalism as we know it today. It's trashing the planet and it's trashing our lives. Annie Leonard's solution? Make the government stop subsidizing bad capitalist enterprises and start subsidizing good ones. Kevin Carson says that will never happen. Let's ignore both government and the corporations. As they both self-destruct, let's focus on building our own alternative economy. Why don't we end with Chris Hedges? He says that corporations have to be stopped before they kill us all. He agrees with Carson that our government cannot be reformed. We'll never impede the corporations. For Hedges, though, the corporations cannot simply be ignored. The only solution he sees is nonviolent resistance. That doesn't sound like enough, but it's all we have. Here's Hedges at a recent talk at Hofstra University. Here he begins by praising Occupy Wall Street.
This is a movement which is absolutely beyond the comprehension of a hierarchical society. They're criticized because They don't have specific demands. Why aren't they protesting against corporate personhood? Why aren't they calling for electoral reform? Because they understand that the whole damn system is rotten. They understand that if we do not dismantle the power of these corporations and thwart the bizarre ideology that human behavior should conform to the dictates of the marketplace, which flies in the face of 3,000 years of economic history, we're finished. And there was a front page story on the New York Times about the forests dying in Montana. If our trees die, we're dead as a species. We either pretend global warming doesn't exist, or we pretend the equally self-deluded belief that we can all adapt to it if we do not break our dependence on fossil fuel very, very quickly. It's over. And everybody in that plaza gets it. If we do not break the power of these corporations, we will live in a form of neo-feudalism. When they tell the American worker to be competitive on a global marketplace, they're telling them to be competitive with prison labor in China. And what has been instilled within us by a public relations industry, this inner compulsion towards consumption, if we don't break this, we're finished. And they get that. They know how little time we have left, and they know the monstrous evil they're up against. And issuing demands about electoral reform, which they also know, is an utter waste of time. Because the system is dead. It doesn't work. All of the traditional mechanisms by which reform were possible no longer function. The very qualities that are celebrated in corporate America and celebrated on like reality TV shows like Survivor are the qualities of psychopaths.
So that it gives the two options only. And any option for anything else essentially would take you out of the game.
No, the argument is that there is no option.
Well, yeah. Well,
there is no way to vote against the interests of Goldman Sachs. Period.
Are you saying that the only way to address the core issues is by countering the system as it stands currently?
Civil disobedience, it's all we have left.
What kind of, like, is there a way of truly acting upon it?
Yeah, go get arrested. That's what I do. I mean, it's not fun. I mean, to steal Wendell Berry's line, going to jail is more time than I care to donate to the U.S. government. But it is all we have left. And all the great moral voices, Wendell Berry, they're all saying it. Wendell, 77 years old, occupied the governor's office in Kentucky against mountaintop removal, which is killing the Appalachian Mountains, the lungs of the eastern United States. That's it. We are the last thin line of defense, and who care about an open and a civil society? And if not, we will see all opposition to groups like the Tea Party, which are proto-fascist movements that celebrate the gun culture, violence, bigotry, racism, and do what all fascist movements do, which is target the vulnerable. Undocumented workers, Muslims, intellectuals, homosexuals, such an old damn story. And so either we get out there and fight for the open society, or we become complicit in it being snuffed out.
And on that cheerful note ends this installment of New World Notes. I wish I could offer a simple fix for the problem. As I said, not this week, but tune in again next week. Maybe I'll have one by then. NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com. Till I get to my non-carborundum, keep fighting the good fight, and ciao.